The next case is 04-1145, Jalen Investments, Inc. versus the Village of Moreland Hills. Mr. Burns.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. There are four issues before this court that are of great importance to property owners and cities alike, and the attorneys in this state who advise them. Two of those issues arise from a decision of the 8th Judicial, 8th District Court of Appeals, which contains two erroneous conclusions, which require the reversal of that decision and the reinstatement of the decision of the Common Pleas Court. One of those decisions by the Court of Appeals, a most incredible decision, I believe. This is a case in which the plaintiff property owner challenged the constitutionality of the prohibition by the zoning code of Moreland Hills of the use of the property proposed by the plaintiff property owner, Jalen. As I said, incredibly, the Court of Appeals determined that in such a case, the trial court may not, is precluded from considering the proposed use of the property in determining the constitutionality of the ordinance. Now, if that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, it certainly doesn't make a lot of sense in relationship to this court's prior decisions in Mobile Oil, Driscoll versus Austintown, and Carches versus Cincinnati. There is no question that there is a right of a party, of a property owner in this state, to contest in a declaratory judgment action the constitutionality of the prohibition of the use of property. It's been done, and this court has said very recently that in Community Concerned Citizens that that is a right that a property owner has.
But you have to show that this zoning is arbitrary, unreasonable, bears no substantial relation to public health, safety, and welfare of the community. Now, the Court of Appeals held that you failed to do that. How is this 2-acre zoning restriction unreasonable, arbitrary, et cetera?
Very, very simply, factually, here is an 18-acre parcel of property in a city that is some 7 square miles in size. All of the properties surrounding it that form its neighborhood are part of a subdivision that was filed in 1915. Small, narrow lots, none of them 2 acres, some of them adjoining this property less than 1/2 acre, with older homes. Some of them were originally cottages on this property. And here, at the at almost the end of this, the two streets that are involved, is this 18 acres. You have to go buy these homes to get there. To get to this property, and it's zoned 2-acre. None of the other properties are zoned 2-acre.
Yeah, but isn't this property unique?
It is, Your Honor, it is unique in the sense that it has 2-acre zoning, and none of its neighboring property does. The rest of the city is 2-acre. The rest of the city, according to the evidence, has large homes. And the trial court, of course, saw all this.
Isn't there some adjoining property separated by a ravine that has 2 acres?
Indeed there is, Your Honor. There's a deep ravine, which is impassable.
But there's still 2 acre homes right next to it.
Absolutely.
Now, you argued that, well, correct me if I'm wrong, the 2 acres that you were looking at, you were proposing to build $500,000 or $600,000 homes on, but determined that probably wouldn't sell as well, correct, because of the adjoining properties?
It would not sell well because that use was inharmonious with the property that was next to it.
The half acres that you propose, you're still planning to build $500,000 or $600,000 homes on, are you not?
That could be the case.
Okay. And the properties that you're complaining about that are older are very small, very modest homes.
That is also correct.
So you're not really putting any different type of home on the 2 acre versus the half acre. You just want to put more in because it'll sell better.
No. I beg to differ, Your Honor.
Well, that seemed to become pretty clearly. I mean, you're not building small little homes to match the character of the neighborhood. You still want to put big homes on. You just want to put them on a half acre because you can sell more of them.
Your Honor, may I say that the homes that would be on that are proposed on the half acre lots would have a footprint of 2,400 square feet because that's all the zoning code allows. The other homes would be much larger than that.
But the prices that were quoted for the new homes in the evidence I saw were still $500,000 to $600,000.
Your Honor, that may be true. It depends what the quality of the house is. That which was proposed.
So your argument that you can't use that property to build those big homes because you got these little tiny older homes next to it doesn't make any sense when you're going to build still big expensive homes that don't match the little tiny homes next to it.
No. Once again, Your Honor, the homes that are proposed to be built are smaller homes. They're half the size of the homes, less than half the size of the homes that are currently being built.
But a heck of a lot more expensive than the neighborhood they're next to, correct?
They are more expensive, and that's the reason, Your Honor, why if you only have 6 of them, nobody is going to buy them. They're completely inharmonious. The testimony, and it was unrefuted, was that in order to have a development where you can sell homes, you have to have a sufficient quantity because nobody is going to buy 6 homes or 7 homes or 8 homes or 9 homes that are situated there for an inexpensive price. When you build, and this was the testimony, when you build a new home among a group of older homes, the new home is depreciated by the condition and the type and the price of the older home. So that in order to succeed, you have to build something which will have its own identity, which will bring people there.
But
that's the problem.
It appears that this is a wooded area and, as I said earlier, unique. And so you could build million-dollar homes, and they would 9 of them, and they would sell because of the property.
If the court please, first thing is that the property is not, the central part of the property is not wooded. The trial court saw that because she visited the property. Mm-hmm. It's not so.
Excuse me. I'd like to get us to the legal issue here. Isn't it true that if Moreland Hills, I understand Moreland Hills from the evidence and from the Court of Appeals opinion, Moreland Hills is a part of the river, the Chagrin River Valley, and their zoning here, the 2 acre lots, is designed to help to preserve, to use a general term, preserve that valley, runoff and so forth. And so they have a plan, and part of the plan is that we'll confine the lot sizes to 2 acres. If Moreland Hills proves that its reason for having 2 acre lots is reasonable, not arbitrary, is that the end of the question, or do we still need to, I take it from your briefing that we still need to look at how that plan, that zoning plan, is applied to you, even though it may on its face appear to be reasonable and not arbitrary because it has rationale to support it?
Your Honor, that is absolutely correct. You must determine that. By the way, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I'm my eye on the clock. Here, the city's whole defense of this, and if the court please, there was no defense by the city other than an environmental defense. Normally, these cases are defended on the basis that what you're going to do is to change the character of the neighborhood. Half-acre lots with homes on them is in keeping with the character of the neighborhood. They couldn't argue otherwise. That would be harmonious because you'd have the same row of homes on these lots that you would have in the neighborhood, not bigger homes on big lots. Their whole defense was that the environment was going to, excuse me for saying so, but this is the fact, was going to save them because 2-acre lots are inviolate in Moreland Hills. The whole city has made it 2-acre lots. Insofar as the environment defense is concerned, it relied upon the testimony of one witness, and this is the second issue in this case. That witness, a nice person, but testified to a series of conclusions for which she had neither the expertise in some cases, did not have the facts to back it up. Her testimony imploded on cross-examination. Not only did she make a colossal error, and by the way, it's not just making an error. You got a trial judge looking at her, and the questions were, well, isn't this true? Isn't this true? Isn't this true? And you got a witness who's reluctant to find her own error, but rather something else must be wrong. It couldn't be an error. Finally, the village called a recess and stipulated to her error. But she went on. Let me give you one example because time is so short. She determined that, for instance, this development was going to take up more of the woodlands. They were going to cut down more trees. Of course, the city doesn't have any ordinance protecting trees. Doesn't have any ordinance protecting riparian setbacks. Doesn't have any ordinance limiting the amount of impervious surface. Doesn't have any of those things. Our development, by the way, accomplished many of those things by itself. But she allowed, in her computations, 25 feet around each house and driveway for the amount of trees that were going to be taken down. She did not account for the fact that somebody in this world buying a house might want to have a lawn in their front yard, or a lawn in their backyard, or a garden, or a place for a play field.
Well, let me ask back to the legal issue, because you're digging into a lot of facts there. Your argument is that this court said you couldn't look at the proposed use in evaluating reasonableness. That's your complaint, right?
That's one of them.
Now, if a court looks at the current zoning and says that zoning is constitutional, why does it matter what the proposed use is? If the current use zoning is constitutional, you could do 400 different things with the use and want to take a look at them and find the 400 different things are also constitutional. But if their current zoning is constitutional, why does the proposed use matter?
Because in this particular case, if you'd gone the other way, the 2-acre zoning and the court said that she concluded that it was unconstitutional.
So your argument
But that's not a necessary conclusion.
Is your argument really that you're upset they didn't allow you to look at the proposed use, or is your argument that the current zoning is unconstitutional?
It's the proposed use. And the reason that the proposed use
is... So you're not arguing that the current use is unconstitutional? The current zoning is unconstitutional?
Your Honor, the fact is that we could argue that, but the reason that we didn't argue that, the reason that we argued that the prohibition of the proposed use is unconstitutional, because it built in protections to the environment.
But what does that do to the right of a city to say, this is how we want to zone it, and it's constitutional? Just because you have a better idea or you would like to do something differently, why is that a legal challenge to what is a current, legitimate, constitutional zoning?
2-acre zoning in the municipality is generally constitutional. 2-acre zoning might be constitutional if the city had some legitimate reason to keep it in force. For instance, if it was going to damage the environment to such an extent, if you had more homes, that might be a defense to it. It wasn't here because the city had no such interest. But if I merely say the 2-acre zoning is unconstitutional as applied to this property, without anybody knowing what's going to go there, the city can legitimately can be concerned about what might go there that would affect the environment.
Just so I understand your argument, you're not saying the current zoning in place is unconstitutional.
Here, I am.
You're just arguing that what you want to do with it, they won't let you do because you're arguing they have an obligation to let you do what you do if what you want to do is not unconstitutional.
I'm sorry, I'm not making myself clear. The particular use that we want to make of this property, the plaintiff wants to make of this property, the prohibition of that is unconstitutional because the city has no substantial relationship to the health, safety, morals, and welfare of the community in prohibiting it. That's what the trial court found, and that's what the evidence showed.
What concerns me is if we rule in your favor, because we're not just deciding your case, Marlin Hills, but if we declare this unconstitutional, this 2-acre limitation, it has wide ramifications throughout the state of Ohio. Cities will not be able to limit the size of properties. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, we haven't claimed in any sense that large lot zoning is unconstitutional. It depends where it is. Here, it's like putting a round peg in a square hole.
Well, isn't your argument really that your development will also protect the environment as well as the 2-acre zoning?
That's what the evidence showed. And the evidence showed failed to show the two acre requirement here would have any beneficial effect on the environment, unless you want.
Is 2 acres arbitrary? I mean, could they have said 5 acres or 4 acres?
It may be, Your Honor, but we're not suggesting that simply because a city picks out a certain size that it therefore fails. That's not the point. I live in a city in which they have 5-acre zoning. That's not the point. That's a political decision. It's simply that when you take 2-acre zoning and you stick it in an area in which you have half-acre homes, it doesn't fit. And if those homes happen to be old and decrepit and have septic tanks that are leaking into roadside ditches, you better have some way of building something that people are going to want to come to, because they're not going to want to go to a new home at current building costs built alongside of those homes. And that's the point. Nothing wrong with large lot zoning. Nothing wrong with it where it belongs. It didn't belong here. That's why we talked about the prohibition of this use with its protections, what we were going to build. And if you look at the complaint.
You need to sum up, Mr. Burns.
Here, there are two other issues that are very important. I'll try and pick them up later if counsel for the village does that.
Mr. Spremulli.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. Good morning. The village of Moreland Hills is a community situated in the northeastern part of Cuyahoga County. It's bordered on the south portion of it, abuts the South Chagrin Reservation of the Cleveland Metro Parks. The Chagrin River runs through a portion of the village of Moreland Hills. Its topography is characterized by steep slopes, deep ravines, hillsides, and mature wooded forests. This particular parcel is an 18-acre parcel, which is situated in the village of Moreland Hills. And as the court indicated earlier by some of the questions it asked Mr. Burns, it is bordered on the north and the west by smaller homes that were plotted in the late 1920s, early 1930s. And it's bordered on this particular parcel is bordered on the south and the east by two-acre lots which conform to the current zoning, separated by a deep ravine. The Court of Appeals...
That would be the two-acre lots that are actually developed are on the other side of the ravine.
They're on the other side of the ravine. They consist of homes in the $500,000 to $800,000 range. I think there was testimony by the developer.
The appellant's brief, there's a topography map on page 7. Is that an accurate portrayal of the topography?
It would be an accurate portrayal of the topography, yes.
All right. The value, I realize this, there was some discussion about the value of the homes that would be adjacent to this property. 150,000, 200,000.
The homes that are to the
older homes.
West and to the south?
Yeah.
Probably in the $150,000 range. I think that might have been the testimony. That's correct. Okay.
So let's go to the legal issue. If I understand the appellant's brief and argument, even if you were to prevail here, the appellant argues strongly that the Court of Appeals, that there are a couple of things that we must correct as it applies to other cases. One, the Court of Appeals failure to consider the proposed use. In other words, if I understand Mr. Burns' argument, it is that they are advancing the most limited constitutional attack on the ordinance possible. They are not attacking the two-acre zoning. They're attacking it only as it applies to this property. And so the worry that this knocks out lot size zoning everywhere in Ohio would be correct only if we reversed the Court of Appeals and just gave a blanket decision. But what he is arguing is that you have to focus on the limitations of the use and the proposed use and that's what they've set up, and that our case law indicates that's allowed. So am I correct in that analysis, that even if you win, we would need to correct that part of the Court of Appeals opinion?
Well, with all due respect, I don't believe that's exactly what the Court of Appeals said. What the Court of Appeals said is the focus is on the ordinance at issue, not the property owner's proposed use. The Court of Appeals says the proposed use can be considered, but the focus should be on the ordinance in question, not the proposed use. And I think that the reason they reached that conclusion is because in this case, the Village of Moreland Hills wasn't denying and has never denied the developer the right to use his property. He can build up to 9 homes on that property. What the developer wants to do.
But that's where the rub comes in, and that's where the whole specific, it seems to me, the whole argument about it has to be specific to the property and the proposed use. And I don't want to mischaracterize what the argument's about here, but looking at this topography map and the road that you would have to build in, it would seem that if it's 2 acres only, that you're really up against it in terms of ever making that work and being saleable. The cost of putting the sewer, the road, and all of that, and then the issue for the upscale house and the size of the house, the McMansion, if you will, that would have to be built in order to, and the owner has concluded this, those just wouldn't be saleable. So it seems the issue becomes, is this going to be buildable at all? At least I think that's their argument, is that if they can't do this, you just can't succeed, and that the village and the neighbors, who the neighbors, understandably, that have been there forever, they've got a park in their backyard, and they'd like to have a park forever.
Their argument is economic feasibility. They're saying it's not economically feasible.
Well, we don't have to be concerned with the price of the homes, do we? That's not the issue for us.
But when the argument is economic feasibility, as it is here,
and they don't
allege a taking, which they didn't allege, then
no, that's
the standard
not, taking isn't argued here, is it, Mr. Spencer?
No, they haven't alleged a taking, but the evidence of economic feasibility is the evidence you used if you're going to establish the constitutionality of the ordinance in a taking. If you're not alleging a taking, then the standard is, does the ordinance bear a substantial relation to the health, safety, and welfare of the residents?
And the city's position is with respect to the environment, am I right?
In this instance, the two-acre zoning the village has contended is an ordinance that has been passed to protect the environment, to protect and preserve these natural resources that exist throughout the village, not just on this particular site. And the testimony of the village's expert was unrefuted. There was no testimony from appellant. No expert testified from appellant about the natural resources that existed on this site and how they would be impacted by high-density development.
Well, I think they said that their development was going to take care of environmental concerns at the half-acre development proposal. And their position, I think, is that you then have to consider that in terms of whether or not it will impact the environment, which was the city's concern.
Part of that question, I think, then, Your Honor, is, are the municipalities then going to give over to the developers how they're going to protect the environment?
Which leads me to the real issue that I think we have here. Do we need to modify Goldberg or Shimo or revisit Central Motors in order to articulate a rule of law? Or what is your view of where the law is and whether we should consider the proposed use or the zoning ordinance in the abstract?
Our view of the law in this particular case is if economic feasibility is going to be the basis to challenge the constitutionality of the ordinance and you don't allege a taking of your property, then you are left with the other standard, which is, does this ordinance bear a substantial relation to the health, safety, and welfare as it pertains to that particular property? And if that's the standard, the Court of Appeals said, well, your witness was a credible witness, and there was no credible evidence and testimony to refute that testimony.
Could Moreland Hills have said, we think 5 acres is going to satisfy the environmental concerns, or 10 acres?
I can only.
And why is 2 not arbitrary?
I can only rely upon the testimony, again, of our expert who said that low-density zoning is the primary tool to protect the environment. So in this instance, the village of Moreland Hills has come to the conclusion that it's 2-acre is the low-density zoning that best protects the environment of this community.
Well, what environment are you
talking
about? I mean, it seems to me that there are plenty of people who would argue that spread out big lots is the most harmful thing to an environment, that where people live ought to be concentrated, with followed by large areas of open space. So I would think people could argue that both ways. I want to come back to this issue. You're arguing that they needed to allege a taking, that they could not challenge the ordinance, the constitutionality of the ordinance as it applies to this specific property on an economic basis alone, that the ordinance makes it virtually undevelopable or very difficult to develop.
That's the way we've interpreted the language in Goldberg and Shimo. In fact, I think the language in Goldberg is that economic feasibility is irrelevant. And in Shimo 4, I think in 2002, again reiterated the standard. In a taking case, you can challenge the constitutionality of the zoning ordinance by proving that it doesn't bear any substantial relation to the health, safety, and welfare as
but
it pertains to that
a
property, or you can challenge the constitutionality of the ordinance by determining that it has no economically viable use. Well, that's what they did here. That's their case. Their case was economic feasibility, and all of their witnesses, the city planner, the appraiser, and the city engineer all addressed that issue of economic feasibility, but never alleged a taking. So,
and you're saying that they have to that you can't challenge the ordinance on economic feasibility, and offer an alternative, a reasonable alternative that fits for the community. You have to simply say we want paid for our land. It's an all or nothing. There's no middle ground here. That it seems to me they're trying to find, instead of asking the community to pay for this property, they're asking for something that lets it be developed in some sort of conformity with the surrounding neighborhood. And we're not going to get into trying to determine what the value or the price of the home, or whether it's got gold fixtures or gold-plated fixtures, but your argument is it has to be all or nothing.
Our argument is, with respect to the evidence, Your Honor, if economic feasibility is going to be the way you're going to challenge the constitutionality of the ordinance, then by virtue of Goldberg and Schemel, you need to allege a taking to bring in that evidence. And if you don't do that, if you're going to rely upon economic feasibility and not allege a taking, then there's a different standard that the court needs to look at to see if the ordinance is arbitrary and unreasonable. And the Court of Appeals looked at that standard and said, based on the evidence, you didn't meet your burden of proof beyond fair debate, beyond a reasonable doubt. That's why they reversed, in our opinion.
So was it a simple fact that they did not allege a taking that you're arguing about? So, I mean, I'm trying to get my mind around this. We're talking about the challenge as applied, the ordinance as applied, not a facial challenge, which is totally different.
That's correct.
And are you saying that had they, in their pleadings, alleged a taking, then the evidence regarding economic feasibility would have been proper in deciding whether the ordinance as applied to them was unconstitutional?
It may have been relevant, and if you, in reviewing that Court of Appeals decision, you'll see that the Court of Appeals even made the same statement. Okay. You relied upon economic feasibility. Had you alleged taking, maybe that would have been relevant, mm-hmm. but you didn't, and so it's not.
Well, is the focus on their proposed use, or is the focus on the ordinance as written?
It's the focus is on the ordinance as applied to that particular property in this instance, in our opinion. Finally, I would just like to conclude by reiterating some of the remarks made by our expert, that the zoning ordinance in this case fulfills the comprehensive plan, which is the community's vision of what they want to see happen to preserving the natural features. It's the community's choice, vision, and preference that they preserve topography, vegetation, drainage patterns, and wildlife. The lowest density development is one of the primary tools that communities use to protect open space natural areas by creating lower density. There was no evidence provided by appellant in this case to refute that statement.
Well, counsel, I'm lowest density development here is no development at all. And I'm wondering, do you really want to invite the appellant to come back and file a takings case and to be in a position where Moreland Hills has to buy the property or might have to?
Well, lower density development in this case, Your Honor, is up to 9 homes on this site, 3,000 to 4,000 square feet. 500,000 to 800,000 in price. That's low density in this particular case.
Would you buy a house of that magnitude with the $150,000 home on a half acre lot in your backyard?
Quite frankly, Your Honor, it's a beautiful property, and I would. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spearley. Mr. Burns, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
If there were a gas station that were next to this property, and therefore you couldn't build a house next to it because it was inharmonious, the result would be that you'd have an economic problem. The economic problem results from the inharmonious planning that exists in this area.
But if you use the economic argument against every zoning ordinance, you challenge every zoning ordinance, don't you? Isn't that the reason that we've held that you cannot use the economic argument unless you're alleging a taking?
I don't believe that this court has held that you can't use the economic argument.
You disagree with counsel.
If it pleases the court, the fact that you have an economic problem sometimes is the result of bad planning. If you have bad planning, then you have a situation in which there is no substantial advancement of the health, safety, morals, and welfare by leaving it stay that way.
Let me ask you this question. A number of the amicus briefs, as you know, the Municipal League and a number of the villages in the area who filed amicus briefs in support of the Court of Appeals opinion, generally say these are legislative matters. These are matters that we trust city councils to and zoning boards, but city councils ultimately to decide what the collective best interests of the residents of a village or a city are. And the courts ought to be very careful, very slow to tinker with that. What's your response to
My
that?
Response is I agree with them, but where it is proved beyond a reasonable doubt that the planning that's been done does not substantially advance the health, safety, morals, and welfare of the community, that's a judicial standard, not a legislative one, and that ordinance or the prohibition of the use must fall.
So we need to, I guess, review the record, as we always do, but we need to review the record here and determine whether the Court of Appeals is correct in its conclusion that there is sufficient evidence to support the village's claim that this zoning does address or is compliant with the legal standard of health, welfare.
That is correct. The record here is very important, and I must say that this decision by the Court of Appeals, in which it usurps the role of the trial judge in determining the credibility of witnesses, is almost unheard of in this state. It just doesn't happen. That's the second error that this court made. Let me just point out once again.
Very quickly.
The trial judge, who did an excellent job here, asked questions of every witness, made sure that she understood everything that was going on. She had trouble. Why is it that you can't sell homes if you have to go past this neighborhood? Is this snootiness, she said? And the answer was, there are places, Your Honor, where you may go because there is a reason to go there that you otherwise might not go there. She said, oh, yeah, there's a restaurant.
Are those matters that we should be concerned with?
Absolutely.
When we're deciding a legal standard?
Here, they are only in this sense. If someone has the notion here that this court somehow took away the legislative prerogatives of Moreland Hills, if you look at the record, that is absolutely not so. The evidence here was conclusive that there was no substantial benefit to the city, no legitimate governmental interest in prohibiting this development, and every reason why that she should have decided the way she did.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.